Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Borosil Limited Q1 FY24 earnings conference call hosted by Monarch Networth Capital. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Rahul Dani from Monarch Networth Capital. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, hi. Thank you, Dovan. Good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of Monarch Networth Capital, we're delighted to host the senior management of Borosil Limited, represented by Mr. Shreevar Kheruka, MD CEO, Mr. Rajesh Kumar Chaudhary, Whole-time Director, Mr. Anand Sultania, CFO, and Mr. Balesh Talapady, Vice President, Investor Relations, Business Analysis. We will start the call with opening remarks from Mr. Shreevar, and then we'll move to Q&A. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
So thank you, Rahul and Monarch, for hosting this call. Good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure for the Borosil team to be interacting with you again. Borosil Limited's board approved the company's financial results for Q1 FY24 on August 14, 2023. Our results and an updated presentation have been sent to the stock exchanges and have also been uploaded on the company's website. Consolidated revenue operations during the first quarter ended June 2023 was INR 250.6 crores as against INR 216.2 crores. That is a growth of approximately 16% over the same period last year. During the quarter, the company achieved a consolidated EBITDA before exceptional and one-time items, including investment income, of INR 31.2 crores as against INR 29.2 crores. The EBITDA margin was 12.4% in Q1 FY24 as against 13.5% in the same period last year. PBT during Q1 FY24 was INR 10 crores as against INR 26.1 crores in Q1 FY23. Last year, during Q1, we had an insurance claim resulting in an exceptional gain of 5.1 crores INR, whereas this year during Q1, we had one-time expenses of INR 2.9 crores due to due diligence expenses and acquisition opportunities. So that's a total swing of 8 crores there. Also, the investment income is lower by about INR 2.9 crores during this quarter as compared to the quarter in the last year. Finally, depreciation and finance costs are higher by about INR 10 crores, primarily due to the commissioning of the new opal furnace during Q4 FY23. During the quarter, Borosil recorded a consolidated profit after tax of INR 6.4 crores as compared to INR 19.4 crores during the same period last year. Coming to our business-wise performance, Borosil's consumer business comprising glassware products and non-glassware products under the brand Borosil and its opalware range under the brand Lara started with a very strong sales performance of INR 136.2 crores as against INR 148.7 crores during the same period last year. That is a growth of 18.4% over the same quarter last year. Sales of glassware products were muted with sales of INR 39.2 crores as against INR 40.7 crores, so that's slightly negative. The glassware market expansion has been flat during the first quarter. This will improve going forward as we continue our efforts to enhance our product offering and increase availability of our products across various channels. Non-glassware products grew by 19% to reach a turnover of INR 70.8 crores during this period. And here we saw good growth across all our ranges. Non-glassware sales of Borosil brand now comprise about 64% of our revenue. Our opalware brand Lara achieved 66.2 crores. That is a growth of 36.2% over the same period in the previous year. EBITDA for the consumer business was at 15.7% as against 12.7% during the same quarter last year. We have seen some softening of direct costs such as fuel and raw material prices during the first quarter, and we expect to continue seeing margin improvements as we further scale revenues. However, as already mentioned in the past, the company will continue its marketing spend behind both its brands, that is Borosil and Lara, to increase consumer mind share and grow the brand digitally. And as evidenced by our sales numbers, I believe that these spends are having positive results. At this juncture, the focus on the company is to expand the franchise of brand. We want to bring more users into the category of microwavables and upgrade and convert users from plastic and melamine into glass storage and opalware. We continue to introduce new products to expand our range of offerings, such as in high-grade steel on-the-go products, as well as domestic appliances. With Borosil and Lara, we aim to become the brand of choice for the modern Indian kitchen for everyday use in storing, preparing, cooking, heating, and serving. Moving on to the scientific division, net sales during the first quarter of 2024 were 74.4 crores. That is a growth of 10.2% over Q1 FY23. This sale includes sales of 7.8 crores from the recently acquired process chemistry business of Goel Scientific, which was not there in the same period last year. Our scientific product business comprises four product ranges now. That is lab glassware, lab instrumentation, that is under brand LabQuest, primary glass packaging for pharma customers under the brand Klasspack, and the recently acquired process chemistry business. During Q1 FY24, lab glassware sales were 42.8 crores. That is a growth of 3.2% over Q1 FY23. LabQuest was 6.7 crores. That is a growth of 24.7% over last year. Klasspack was 17.1 crores. That's a decline of 17.4%. And Goel Scientific was 7.8 crores, which was not present in our revenues at all last year. The company has identified a number of levers to ensure long-term sustainable growth in the scientific division. In the lab glass consumables market, the company's push towards selling on government e-marketplace has seen some traction. This channel reduces the risk on receivables and could potentially improve order flow from the government to Borosil. Borosil also entered the rupees 110 crore filter paper market, which was hitherto dominated by a single player, and we expect this to continue growth into the future. We continue to add more customers and expand the range of solutions being offered to existing customers. That is on the back of a wider product portfolio, which has already shared four different product ranges. We are also developing an OEM business line for supply of critical items to some of our large export customers, and we expect to retain a dominant position in the domestic market. Export sales continue to see very good traction for lab glass as well as vials, and not only do we have repeat customers, but our wallet share for our customers also is increasing. In lab instrumentation, we will focus on increasing the range of solutions that we offer and at the same time expand our customer base. Recent products developed and introduced by the Borosil Technologies team include MIDI pilot lab reactors, bottle top dispensers for hazardous acids, and as well as products in the nutrition and environment categories. We will leverage our existing customer relationships in the lab glassware business to increase customer penetration for LabQuest. The team has also recently launched process systems, which gives us entry into new customer segments of APIs, bulk drugs, and chemical manufacturers. In pharma packaging, which is at the moment seeing some stress, while we did gain new businesses, we have loss of revenue from a few existing clients due to which sales are impacted. Several factors have contributed to the setback, including substantially reduced demand for injectables, heightened competitive pressures, and pricing challenges in regulatory markets, cost reduction efforts affecting input materials, and a strategic transition to more cost-effective packaging materials for the drug price control order, that's DPCO business, as well as general injectables. During Q1 FY24, the company acquired 90.17% equity in Goel Scientific through subsidiary Klasspack Limited. Borosil's SIP business will derive several synergies with this acquisition. It'll add a complementary product portfolio to Borosil's existing range that can leverage Borosil's brand and strong sales and distribution network. Borosil's R&D capabilities, together with Goel Scientific's specialized glassblowing skills, will enable the company to provide its customers with world-class made-in-India products. The combined operations are expected to provide deeper market penetration, entry into new markets, enhanced product offerings, and an innovative range of products. This will lead to input cost optimization for clients as well as sourcing benefits. In the interim, in this initial phase, we will be investing behind setting up many systems and processes into Goel Scientific, as well as hiring people as needed to enhance the sales outreach, which may have a short-term impact on costs. However, we believe the business would perform very well even in the medium term. EBITDA margin for scientific products during Q1 FY24 has reduced from 15.2% last year to 8.5% in this quarter, Q1 FY24. Margins in scientific glassware have showed improvement. However, the drop in the division's EBITDA is on account of lower margins in the glassware business, as well as the higher costs on the LabQuest business, as well as the recently acquired process chemistry business. In LabQuest, more than proportional cost increases were attributed to R&D expenses and higher staff costs as we continue to scale the technical team. Borosil Technology is still a nascent business and the subsidiary is in an investment phase and is currently incurring losses. As the business scales, these costs will get normalized, and we expect that new products, which will take about 1 to 3 years to stabilize, should help the business show positive results. In Classpack, EBITDA margin declined as compared to last year, primarily owing to lower sales during the period. Additionally, gross profit was lower owing to steep increase in cost of materials and power that could not be passed on to the customers. Although we expect the material cost to reduce in the coming periods. We see the situation to improve in the coming quarters as we are seeing more traction of new customer sales as well as reduced input costs. The new borosilicate pressware facility of 25 tons per day in Jaipur is estimated to be commissioned in the third quarter of FY24. The company's board of directors has initially approved the establishment of a borosilicate 3.3 expansion tubing furnace at the company's plant in Bharuch, Gujarat. The decision aimed to enable in-house manufacturing of glass tubing that is a key raw material used in the production of the company's scientific products. The goal was to decrease reliance on external suppliers for this crucial input material. However, as we continuously assess the company's expansion strategy, considering factors such as project cost effectiveness, time considerations, and availability of other options, the decision to proceed with setting up this in-house tubing project has been put on hold. The decision will not impact the company's ongoing operations and will continue to as we will continue to procure the required tubing from external suppliers as we have been doing for the past many years. In previous communications, we detailed our intention to reorganize the company's operations into two distinct, obviously traded entities through a comprehensive arrangement scheme. The appointed date for the scheme is 1st April 2022. Post receipt of observation letters from the stock exchanges and approvals from equity shareholders and creditors, the company has filed its petition with NCLT for seeking its approval on the said scheme. The said petition has been admitted for final hearing, which is now scheduled for 1st September 2023. However, the timelines of this step are not in our control, and we'll keep you informed of the progress in this regard. Overall, we maintain a strong sense of optimism regarding the medium-term potential within the consumer business. While there may be occasional periods of modest growth coupled with consumer caution, we anticipate robust expansion in our sectors driven by favorable long-term trends. Our primary focus will be on introducing innovative new products, enhancing customer experience, and improving efficiency throughout our market channels and supply chain. Additionally, we will invest in strengthening our brand presence. In the scientific segment, we are definitely in a growth phase with addition of various new product portfolios in our basket. We plan to capitalize on our leading position in lab glassware to ensure consistent growth with these new product introductions. Simultaneously, we aim to foster the growth of the instrumentation business through LabQuest and expand our pharma packaging offering via Classpack. And in the medium term, we continue to anticipate double-digit revenue growth for this business. With that being said, I would like to now throw the floor open to questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Rahul Dani from Monarch Network Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, congratulations, Shreevar, on a strong revenue growth. Just a couple of questions from my end. Specifically in the opalware, we have seen competition report very subdued growth, and we have reported extremely strong growth. So I just want to understand how the market is And in terms of margins, you know, our margin expansion has come in at the prime, right? Because of Openware, and where do you see this stabilizing?
Thanks, Rahul. Well, I can't comment on competition, but we also have seen, you know, relatively slower growth. I mean, we had anticipated even higher revenue growth than what we achieved. Unfortunately, I think the market has not been that strong in the first quarter, and I think that's the case across consumer product companies. We continue putting efforts behind all our channels, and I believe that our strategy to broad-base our various channels has resulted in what I would call still very good numbers. On the point of margins, the consumer division margin expansion is definitely driven by higher margins at Alara facility, as we see more capacity utilization, I think the margins will continue increasing. We are quite positive, although frankly said, we do hope that consumer sentiment picks up during the Diwali period, which is just upcoming now.
Sure. And secondly, on the scientific division, we do understand that you've been spending on the recent transaction. So do you expect margins to kind of be in these levels for the next couple of quarters and maybe pick up from next year?
No, I think scientific margins should pick up from this quarter itself, because there were specific also reasons why we had higher costs in the first quarter. So I don't see them at this level. We definitely see we should come back to more or less consistent levels of margin as we had in the last year. However, to see margin improvement compared to last year, I think yes, this will take maybe another year or so, because I think our Boston Technologies businesses is one of the reasons the margins are lower. It's basically higher cost than what we're selling. I mean, there's a net loss in that division. But I think given what we're seeing in terms of traction of our instrumentation range, I think from next year we should be profitable there as well. And so that drag on the margins which is currently being faced from there should go away. And ClassPack also is a drag on the margin, which also should improve, because we've got, I would say, 3-4 very strong customers who've been added into our kitty. Now, it takes time for them to kind of, scale up operations. So that should also happen in the next, you know, 1 or 2 quarters. So I think margins will bounce back. But to see substantial improvement in margins compared to the year before, I think we'll have to wait for next year for that.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aditi Patel with Nivesha Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hello.
You are audible, ma'am. You may proceed.
Hi. Good afternoon, sir. Regarding the capacity expansion for the pressware facility and the ClassPack, I wanted to understand the status of the same. I couldn't follow that in the commentary. So first, my question is regarding the CapEx. Yeah.
Yes. So as far as ClassPack is concerned, I think more or less whatever was the CapEx planned, it's already deployed. Unfortunately, the CapEx has come in at a time when demand is slow. So it's kind of sitting idle, frankly. Our capacity utilization is much lower than we had anticipated. So that's a negative for us. Like I said, we're working on new customer additions, which we already have achieved some success. And assuming that these customers come in, we should be able to start utilizing that CapEx. So CapEx cycle for ClassPack is more or less finished. A couple of, things will be added in the second half of this year, which are already, let's say, accounted for, but nothing new. And as far as the pressware facility is concerned, we had, some delays because of delay in shipment of machines, especially from Europe. And, the supply chain issues, which were very, very strong last year, while reduced, are still not completely, gone. So we expect that production facility to start in the third quarter of this financial year, sometime in the third quarter.
Okay. So like, when we see the ClassPack division, so margin-wise, if I see the affected margin, can I also attribute it that we have already done the CAPEX and that involves an amount of CAPEX expenses too, other than the raw material price increase?
Yeah, of course. The depreciation has gone up because of the CAPEX. Sorry, is that your question?
So The same thing, sir. The margin that is affected in the Class Pack division, is it only on the account of raw material price increase or because the CapEx is also completed and like the employee expenses and everything you have already deployed for the same division?
Yeah, so that's right. So what happened is, A, the CapEx was deployed. B, our fixed costs, which are, let's say, employee costs, energy costs, and a lot of times are fixed costs. The fixed costs, you have the reverse of operating leverage happening because your sales have degrown, and therefore, so those costs, which are all built into the system for higher sales growth, are actually now spread over a lower sales base. And therefore, our fixed cost as a percentage of overall revenues have increased substantially, which also destroys your margin profile. So, and these are costs which are not easy to, you don't want to take a short-term decision to cut these costs because once your sales comes back, then, if you need those skilled people, you need them. So, you have to live with it for a few months till you get the sales back. So, yes, you're right. The margin cut in scientific division is attributable to two main reasons. One was the higher costs in Klasspack associated with the higher CapEx and the general lower sales. And second is on Borosil Technologies, again, because of the more investment in skilled people to help, let's say, drive new product development.
Okay. And so, for the Klasspack division, the revenue mix for the domestic and export market would be?
Yeah, so actually, that's one of the silver linings for us, which our export sales have actually been increasing every month-on-month, year-on-year. So, in fact, this year, I think exports will be more than 30% of revenues, which 3 years ago was hardly 3%, 4%, 5%. So, that's a silver lining for us. And we are working harder to see whether we can take that up to maybe 35%, 40%, even higher than that. So, that's something because the export customers are paying us for that CapEx that we run for those camera inspection systems and for all the value addition that we're doing. So that's certainly something that we see with optimism.
Okay. And lastly, sir, when do you see the raw material prices to stabilize for this division?
See, raw material prices have will reduce this from this quarter on, and then they will be stable only. I don't think they will increase further. So yeah, from next quarter on, I think you should see an improvement or reduction in raw material prices.
Okay. Yeah, that's all from my end. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Priyank Chheda with Vallum Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. So my question is on the opalware. Can you elaborate? You did mention that your broad-based channel strategy has resulted in you remaining immune to the macro consumer slowdown that you are witnessing. So if you can elaborate that further, along with a few data points onto what is your revenue contribution across the channels, which channel has led to growth or degrowth? Thank you. That's my first question.
So frankly, we don't share the channel-wise data, and I would not like to do that at this point. However, we consistently maintain that our people are our strength, and we have a very strong sales team across all the channels, whether it be general trade, modern trade, CSD, even exports, our institutional sales, of course, e-commerce, MyBorosil. Across all these channels, we have very strong teams which we have worked on and developed and also had to have lower overall margins in the business because of the higher manpower cost. But at some point, that is kind of paying back for us. So that, combined with our marketing expenses, have, in my opinion, driven the sales growth. But unfortunately, I'm not at liberty to share the channel-wise numbers or growth. But I can say that the growth is very broad-based, and I can't say that there's any specific order or specific channel or region, in fact, even, which has contributed disproportionately to the growth that we see. Which is all good news for us.
Would this be relevant across the industry, or would it be only for you? If you can help us with that.
I mean, look, people are relevant across every industry. So yes, it's relevant across all industries. So I think yes, it is relevant to every industry that if you have good people and they have a good they know what to do, then normally they get the job done. So that's in my opinion, that's what I'm seeing. I can't give you any further, I mean, I have data on that subject.
Sorry, I was referring to the channel growth or the broad-based growth that you have witnessed. Is the same trend across the industry or is only specific to borosilicate and LP?
So, I'm sorry, I don't pay too much. I mean, I have a general idea of what's happening, but I don't pay too much attention to competition numbers. So I think you're in a better place to kind of check that versus me.
So one more query on your presentation where you mentioned the industry size, the opalware market size is around 900 crores as per your presentation. It's the same size that you had mentioned in September 2021. So despite it's been estimated to be growing at 20%, can you help us with...
I think we may have made a mistake there. Maybe we have to revise that. It's definitely gone up, for sure.
No problem. Yeah. If you can help us with what are the industry dynamics in opalware right now, how they are shaping up, any sense on are the organized players gaining more share versus unorganized? If you can help me on the industry dynamics.
See, unorganized versus organized in Opal, there's hardly any unorganized in Opal. It's all organized. However, I've repeatedly said this, I don't consider the market to be Opal. The market is dinnerware. Okay. When you go out to buy a plate, you're not thinking I want to buy an Opal plate. Or when I say you, I mean anybody. Okay. They want to buy a dinner set or they want to buy a cup or a saucer or a mug. So when they go to buy a product, I don't think they necessarily think of which category or rather which material to buy. So we should look at the overall size of the dinnerware market, which is multi-thousand crores, maybe more than 10,000 crores, because you have to add steel there, you have to add plastic there, you have to add bone china and so on and so on. Okay. So if we have to get a share of that pie, not a share of the opal pie. And that has been the consistent messaging from our point of view. And I think if you look upon that as a market opportunity, then we probably, as an industry, we can succeed. Not individually, but as an industry, we can succeed. So I would urge you to look at the entire industry of dinnerware or tableware, servingware, whatever you may wish to call it, and see what let's say, share Opal can take from that.
Got it. Clear enough. In one of your presentations, one of your slides, you have mentioned that you have gained share in the opalware market. If you can help us quantify, if possible. And in general, if you can comment on how has been the competitive landscape in such a sluggish scenario, are the players embarking on to more discounts within the channels or not?
I've not seen much discounting, frankly. I think all the players are very mature and they are extremely able and very, very, let's say, strong. All the players in this Opal business. So I don't see discounting as a challenge. I think in general, like I said, again, I mentioned that we have a broad-based channel strategy, which others may or may not have, and therefore we benefit from it. This also costs us. It costs us by way of higher advertising costs, and it costs us by way of higher manpower costs, which is a cost that we pay, and therefore that impacts our margins. So while our growth has been good, but as you know, that our margin profile is not as good. So it's a cost-benefit thing, and we choose this way. We choose this route. Somebody else may choose some other route. Neither is right or wrong. It's just a question of philosophy.
Got it. Clear enough. And just last question on, has your second furnace started contributing to your sales in the current quarter? Earlier you had guided that you would be looking out to selling out almost of your 60-70% of the capacity in the current year. Given the sluggish scenario, would you want to revise that guidance?
Like I said before, the key is Diwali. Last year we sold out and we have grown 36%. We have not cut prices. So you can assume that volume growth is 36% or 40% in that range. Okay. So in principle, of the second furnace, we're selling that percentage of our capacity versus the 60% that we had really hoped to sell. So let's wait for another quarter. Let's see how Diwali goes. Then I can comment further. But right now it's hard for me to give guidance, further guidance on this.
Got it. Thanks a lot for answering all my questions. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, you may please press star and one. The next question is from the line of Pranay Roop Chatterjee from BCMPL. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Am I audible?
Yes, please.
Yeah. My first question is with respect to the opalware division. I think the festive season this year is beginning sometime end of August, if I'm not wrong. It will go up to sometime second week of October. So on a QOQ basis, should we expect improvement in your opalware sales? If you can comment on how you are seeing July and August progressing.
I'm sorry, I can't give comment. I can't talk anything about this quarter. Only whatever is published. I think, as per my understanding, that's the law. So sorry about that.
Got it. With respect to glassware division, you had said your new furnace will come in Q3. I think I asked this question last quarter as well, and you had said you would have better idea closer to the date. Any information you can share regarding how much cost upfronting can happen because of the new furnace in terms of incremental cost getting built? And in terms of, you would also have some benefit because raw material produced in-house will be cheaper than getting imported. So how would those dynamics sort of play out and how do you vision them playing out over the first 2 to 3 quarters of furnace being active?
Yeah. Look, this is a actually for me the biggest threat or the concern is this furnace, because as you see, our glassware sales have been flat, okay, and which is not a good sign for us. That's not a good sign for us because we definitely need to sell much higher volume. Once we have our own production, the volume from that production is like 3-4 times what we are selling today.
Yes.
So our biggest challenge, in my opinion, for our consumer division, everything else is on track, in my opinion. The biggest challenge for us is how do we sell 3-4 times the volume of the press production when that production starts. So that's something, frankly, we are working on, and I can't say we have an answer to that. That's something that I would say we really need to maybe think something different or get some out of box ideas, because that's not a problem that we've been able to solve yet.
Got it. But if you could still, in case you have had internal discussions, if you could share one or two levers that you would have to, you know, get that additional volume, because you would need to gain share in this market.
Look, the most basic lever is product range. Okay, right now we offer maybe 30-35 SKUs in that glassware category. In our new product line or in our new furnace, what will come online soon. We have almost 85 SKUs that we plan to launch. So the point is that you want to give customers choices. When the customer has a choice, then they're likely to choose something within that range. When you give them fewer choices, then they may choose something totally out of the range. They may not choose that range at all. So I would say the range of products is the number one, let's say, lever that we can pull, that we plan to pull when we launch this range. And that should definitely give us better volume. The number two lever is higher exports, because of China plus one. Now it's also a chicken and egg situation, because we've been contacted by most of the big overseas, let's say, department stores who are interested in the product, but since we have production, they can't approve us and so on. So it's a little bit of a chicken and egg situation. But so that should be a number two lever. And the number three lever would be definitely pricing, which is... Which would need to be attractive to make the product within reach of the everyday consumer. So these are the three levers that we hope to be able to pull once the production comes, and that we hope would help us drive the volume growth in the business.
So interesting point you mentioned, the last one. How much would the price, in your view, how much would the price need to reduce to, you know, sort of materially expand this market, right? Because one of the reasons that the glassware is adoption is low is the price, right? So how much percentage would you expect that number to be?
It'll be different product by product. But like, for example, glass lunch boxes, I think already are quite competitive in general, because you have a broad range of products available and the competition is more or less a similar pricing. But something like a servingware, where we are outpriced when you compare to other categories, there you may need to have a 15-20% reduction. So it may range from anywhere from nothing, you don't need to do anything, to a 15-20% reduction. Somewhere in that range would probably be, you know, the right price point.
Got it. So my last question regarding SIP margins. I think in Q4, EBITDA margins reported was around 22%. That obviously has reduced because of the reasons you mentioned. Should we expect Q2 to be more of a transitory quarter where you are trying to figure out things and, you know, going back to that 18-20% levels, which might come back only in Q3 and Q4? Is that a fair statement?
See, SIP in general is a seasonal business. Q4 is always strong, okay? So one should not look at, you know, either you can't look at preceding quarter and next quarter margins because the quarters themselves are completely different. So it's not that our margins have fallen from 22% to whatever, you know, 8.5% as they have. That's not the way to look at it. To say, I mean, at the end of this year, can we be closer to last year what we did? I think with the exception of Q1, which has not been very good, I think that's a safe statement to say in general, okay? But to again, like I think I answered someone before, that the expansion of SIP margins will probably start happening from next year when those two areas where we are today in a negative situation, one is the Borosil Technologies business and the second is Classpack, those should start picking up again because those are actively dragging our margins down, and both for separate reasons. One is for a sales reason and the other is for higher costs which are not yet kind of absorbed by the product range that we have.
Understood, sir. Got it. Also, thanks for answering my questions.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dhruv Kashyap, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon and thanks a lot for taking my question. The first question was on the Borosil Consumerware division, I mean, the sort of really exciting part of the business. Given that we are currently sort of operating in a fairly flared up consumer inflation environment where there is a tendency of the consumer to deprioritize discretionary spending and so on and so forth, and the fact that I guess one way to mitigate it is to sort of put in more newer exciting offerings in the various categories we operate in and new categories as well, and the dynamics that earlier we were procuring some, manufacturing some was coming from China. We were to risk mitigate that and sort of bring it a lot more into India. Could you just sort of share some color, including the new categories or the new launches that we are getting into? I mean, just give some idea of, given that we are entering the festive season, that how are we placed on the consumer wear business, including the build-up?
Okay, so Dhruv, I'd like to clarify your first statement. I don't think consumer is more or less exciting than scientific. Both businesses for us are extremely exciting, okay? And we love both the businesses and we believe both have incredibly interesting opportunities for us ahead, and also should help return, you know, the returns of both the businesses should be more than what you would otherwise anticipate in a risk-adjusted way. So yeah, just to make sure that I'm clear, both the businesses to us are very exciting, not just one or the other. The coming to your next question on consumer business, we have very much, or let's say very well developed, at least for our size and scale, product management teams. And these teams are continuously going to visit end customers, they're visiting our channel partners, and they figure out what really is the need of the market. It's very bottom-up and not top-down at all. And they have complete autonomy to drive new introductions and to drive our own, whether it's our own factories, whether it's our supplier plants, to drive them to make new products. And, you know, we, as management, we try and get out of the way because once we get in the way, we actually slow down that process. So, you know, I get lots of complaints from my mother because she keeps telling me that I have no idea what products are being introduced at Borosil. And my answer to her is that even I don't know what's going on in terms of new product introduction. That's the pace that I think we launched 109 SKUs last year. So it's a pretty, you know, rapid, say, product launch. Again, this is for our size and scale of operation. And I think that's more or less continuing for this quarter as well. And you will continuously see new products. We could check our website, myborosil.com. You know, I think you'll get a
sense of what's going on over there. And you know, there are different products for online, there are different products for trade, different for LFS. So it's hard to kind of boil all of this down into some metric, but we see a lot of engagement from our end customers with us, and that's how we drive product development.
Yeah, thanks for that, Sridhar. I think lots in common. My sort of mother keeps questioning my judgment as well. But I think on the FIP part of the business, just to understand this, see, there are a lot of parts to it, right? So there is a LabQuest instrumentation. There is the test tube beakers, etc. You know, that part of the business. Then there is the ClassPack part of the business, and now there is Goyal. So for a fairly small revenue, there's a lot of complexities and moving parts. How are you seeing this play out? Because if you start investing in all four and you land up in a situation where there's a soft demand environment, especially given who you cater to as a customer, etc., given that large part of it's B2B where you might not even have pricing power, just help me demystify this, because it sounds very complicated.
Yeah, so complexity is our friend. That's the first point. The more complex it is, the fewer people that can do it. And therefore, if we have complexity and we can solve for the complexity, then you should make better returns than otherwise, right? Otherwise, if it was simple, everyone would do it. So yes, so that point is absolutely correct. The SIP business is definitely complex with many SKUs. The second point is price, except for pharma packaging, which is, which has a different dynamic. The other three verticals, which would be the glassware, the instrumentation, and the process systems business, here actually the pricing, it's not clear that the companies that buy from us have all the pricing power. We also hold a substantial pricing power. We have a big moat, and that is our product range, because this is a C-class item for most of those companies in terms of their annual purchase. And because it's a C-class item, the focus is more on making sure the quality is correct so that they don't have complaints, and also that they get delivery on time. So if we manage that, you know, whatever, few thousand SKUs, and we can deliver this across the country within, let's call it, one day. Say, I think the last I checked, we were delivering about 96% of our SKUs within 24 hours to the end customer. Then they don't want to, I mean, even if they save money on it, they save nothing. They save like pennies. Their total spend on lab, all this stuff put together in a year, would be 3, 4, 5% of their overall spend. So even if they save 5% of that, it doesn't bother them. And on the flip side, if they get bad quality or it gets delayed by 5 days, then they're much more valuable experiments. Their costs, which are the fixed costs of those scientists who are doing all the experimentation, all of that goes for a toss. So I don't really think that they have the pricing power, but I do believe, but it's different for pharma packaging, because in pharma packaging, they're supplying a raw material. And raw material is not a C-class item, it's an A-class item for the pharma company. So that's why there's a slight difference in these four businesses, and not to be looked upon all in under one, say, umbrella. And I think that coming to demand environment, I think India's R&D spend is going to go up. Pharma, you know, generic production in India is going to go up. API production is going to go up. So I think we're at the front end of that curve. And that's a business bet we've taken, that the demand will go up. Obviously, if the demand goes down, then we're in trouble. But I mean, this is a business which is fairly stable. And I don't see any shocks is from the demand side, or something, a new technology which can totally replace you coming up very quickly on the demand side. So, yeah, but of course there's a risk. Every business has a risk, and this has also that risk.
Yeah, it's sort of exceptionally well explained, and thanks a lot for that. I think my last question, very quick one, is that, you know, given that we have come out of a slightly challenged quarter on, let's say, the SIP end of the business, including the margins, and we are entering a very sort of fervent festivity period, because correct me if I'm wrong, in your line of business, you start loading the channels or trade in July, August, September, or in October, November, yeah, December, sort of Diwali. So given that, that's how right. Are you seeing this play out in the July, August, September, October, November, December? I'm not asking for forward guidance, but I'm asking for your expertise and your stewardship in helping us lay people understand that, how is the lay of the land looking?
we can do our job, which is to get the products manufactured or sourced and stock it up, and then we go to the customer and ask for orders. I mean, at the moment, I'm not seeing anything either extremely exciting or extremely depressing. It's kind of neutral. But it's still, you know, this year, Diwali is in November, not October. If I'm not mistaken, sometime in the second week of November. So Diwali is a bit later than normal. So I think the demand should start picking up just about now, or maybe in the first half of September, for a kind of end of August, September, October kind of festive season. So I can't say there's anything, you know, dramatically exciting or anything dramatically depressing. Things are still very much balanced. And I think the next 30 to 45 days, we'll have a very good sense. But it's a little bit too early this year just because of Diwali being too late, meaning being later.
Well, thanks a lot, Shrivar, and I sort of thank you and Senior Mr. Kheruka for your excellent stewardship for both the companies, Renewables and Limited, over the years, and keep up the great work. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants who wish to ask questions, please press star and one. The next question is from the line of Sriram R., an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. My question is on the segmental margins. I mean, is it possible to disclose the segmental margins in the consumer division, like opalware, glassware, and non-glassware?
I'm sorry, we don't do that.
Sorry?
I'm sorry, we don't do that. We don't do that.
Okay, so coming from the competition side, is reporting a higher margin. So I'm just trying to understand where are we heading in terms of our, just want your guidance in terms of margin trajectory. I mean,
yeah.
Where do we see our margins, 5 years from now? That is what I want to understand.
Frankly, 5 years, very difficult. If you go through our previous transcripts, this discussion has been had many times, and I can repeat those points. Number one, we spend higher on advertising and sales promotion by 7-8% compared to our competitors. So that's one of the reasons why our margin of the consumer business are lower. The number two point is that we have larger teams deployed for and therefore manpower cost also slightly higher than what our competitors would be. The third point is that our scale is we are building to build a business which maybe have 1,000-2,000 crore kind of revenue number. And therefore, many of our, fixed costs are higher than our competition. Finally, especially in opal business, because we are relatively newer entrants, our selling prices may be 2-4% lower than the competition. So these factors contribute towards a lower margin. Of course, we have to look at the business margin in different ways. What we manufacture, we look at from a return on capital employed perspective or a EBITDA margin and then a return on capital employed. When we look at our other business, say the stuff that we are not manufacturing but we are designing and then buying or sourcing, there we absolute margin is not really the relevant point to look at. It's more the ROCE, because your capital deployment is much lower. You don't have plant and machinery, it's only working capital. So our targeted ROCE is about 24%, which for this division. And while we're not there yet, I think in the next 2-3 years, I think we should hit that number, assuming we can satisfactorily sell whatever production that we manufacture. So if we hit a 24% ROCE on our consumer business in the next couple of years, I'd be quite satisfied with that result.
Thank you. Got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, to ask a question, you may please press star and one. The next question is from the line of Vaidik from Monarch Networth Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Congratulations on this set of numbers. I just wanted to understand what would be your advertisement cost for the quarter in terms of percentage.
It's about 7-8% this quarter, if I'm not mistaken. Rajesh, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, 7% is the right.
Yes, sure.
Okay.
7%. Okay. And one last question. For the whole year, where do you see your revenues going? Like, at what percent do you see the business would grow? And for FY25 as well?
Look, this is, I can't answer for this year. In principle, we gave a guidance for consumer division to grow 15-20% CAGR. And I think we can stick to that for this year as well. And as far as the scientific division is concerned, we gave a guidance from 10-12%. And I believe we'll stick to that guidance as well. So nothing changes the guidance in either direction so far.
Okay, sir. Thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you. We have no further questions. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Thanks. Well, thank you for all your questions. Really appreciate it. Thank you for your interest in Borosil. As a company, we are, like I said, extremely bullish about both our divisions, both the growth profiles and the margin profiles as they evolve. We are definitely in investment mode. On the consumer side, there's CapEx as well as a lot of expenses on the marketing side. On the scientific side, there is acquisitions and there's also a lot of expense in product development. So we are in that phase of our journey. So I do expect a little bit of volatility on margins in the short run, but in the medium to long run, I believe that these businesses will certainly yield more than a fair return on the capital employed, and that should yield well, bode well for us. We're building really a business to scale, and I'm really proud of our team that's dedicating 24 hours of their life every day to do this. So, and thank you to all our investors and to those who are tracking and interested in our business. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Monarch Networth Capital, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.